You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Now that was more like it. Welcome back to finally another very happy post-game edition of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose of Sports Talk 790. And well, folks, just a few minutes ago, the Rockets polished off a big 125-104 win over the Spurs in Game 4 at Toyota Center. That ties the best-of-seven series at two games apiece. It basically makes it a best-of-three series Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday nights. You can spin it both ways as far as who has the upper hand. I see it as really as close to 50-50 as you'll get. If you're the Spurs, what you'll say is that, well, we have two of the three games at home. Over the years, the Spurs have played very well at the AT&T Center, and historically, Game 5 and especially Game 7, there's a strong correlation with the home team's success. Everything from energy to officiating, a lot of those teams get the benefit of the doubt. The case that the Rockets have is that, well, it's tied 2-2, but the games the Rockets have won, Game 1 and Game 4, were not even close. The Spurs in the second half of both of those games never had a point where they were really even within single digits. It was that much of a beatdown in both of those games. Whereas Game 2 and Game 3, both of those, the Rockets were down 3 points with 10 seconds left in the third quarter. With 12 minutes and 10 seconds left, the Rockets were within one possession. Those games were there for the taking. So yes, while the overall margins might seem similar, well, of course, Game 3 was a little closer, an 11-point margin, but every game decided by double digits. But the difference is that the two the Rockets have won, they have controlled pretty much throughout. A couple of moments in this one, the Spurs did cut it to 4 at the half, so very briefly in the second half, they had it single digits, but not for more than a few seconds, it felt like. Basically, the Rockets have felt more in control of their games than the Spurs have of theirs. So that's what they would argue. The Spurs would say, well, we're a veteran team, we have home court. The reality is there's a little bit of truth in both sides, and this is as close to a 50-50 proposition as you can get. So many storylines for the Rockets in this big win tonight. First things first, I want to give credit to the team as a whole for embracing the magnitude of this game. I think sometimes in NBA Twitter, we have a tendency to understate the importance of a must-win game. Air folks say, well, it's not really a must-win if it's against, unless it's against elimination, bull. This one, if the Rockets had gone down 3-1, having to win both Game 5 and Game 7 in San Antonio, that's not like the Clippers series 2 years ago. Not at all. You're basically down and off-serve twice. That would have been heading for a funeral in Game 5. Psychologically, I heard the Rockets say all weekend that they were treating this as a must-win game, and they played like it. From the outset, their energy was tremendous, and I really thought the Rockets as a team heard it from both Trevor Ariza, Eric Gordon, also James Harden. Throughout the weekend, Saturday's practice, this morning's shoot-around, they were treating it as a must-win game. I loved that the Rockets embraced the magnitude of it. They didn't run from it, and then we saw the effort from the tip. Really, all season long, the theme with the Rockets, they only lost three consecutive games one time, and that was one of the last weeks of the year. They'd already clinched the number three seed, essentially, and Harden was playing with a wrist injury, and two of those three losses were to the Warriors. Aside from that, they never lost three consecutive games all year, and that's because every single time they were challenged and faced any adversity at all, they responded to it like you would like to see a championship contender do, and they continued that tonight. They put the pressure on themselves, and they responded. Now, you're going to hear a lot about how well it was like Game 1 and that they made their threes, and to an extent, there's some truth in that. Rockets did shoot over 52% overall, over 44% from three. Game 1, they set a franchise record 22 threes. Tonight, they were very close to that, 19 of 43. So yeah, everything's easier when you make open shots, and to a degree, they did make some of the shots that they missed in Game 3. However, it wasn't just that. The Rockets did a great job of controlling what they need to control, and by that I mean pace. If you listen to my post-game recap on Saturday of Game 3, if you read Matt Moore's great visual article over at CBSSports.com about the pace, the delay until the Rockets started their initial action in Game 3. It was too late, really, in the third and fourth quarters of that game when it truly got stagnant. Harden waited too often until after 8 seconds had elapsed. It was basically 15 point something in the shot clock, sometimes less than that, when the Rockets initiated their initial action. He was walking the ball up the floor, And with the Spurs' scrambling defense, it took a while and sometimes was impossible for the Rockets to get any kind of secondary action if the first read wasn't there. When you're going up against a great defensive team, well-coached like the Spurs, that's a problem. From the outside tonight, it was different, though, because the Rockets played with pace. Even when the Spurs made baskets, you could see a commitment on behalf of James Harden. Also, pretty much every comment he made after the game in the locker room, pace, pace, pace. You could see him getting back to that word, and I know the Rockets. As I said on Twitter, I don't think what you hear after the game is 100% candid. To an extent, you're always going to say, well, we got our shots and missed them, because you don't want to let the other team think that, you know, they're in your head. But no, I don't think all the shots tonight were the same as Game 3. Now, to an extent, there were some open looks they missed in Game 3, but beyond that, I also think the Rockets generally got a better quality of looks tonight than they did in Game 3 overall. And I think the Rockets playing with pace, led by James Harden, 28 points, 12 rebounds. That's the recipe when the Rockets are at their best. That's essentially his season-long average is 28 and 12, and that's when they're at their best. The 43 points he had on Friday night, yeah, that's great, but he only had 5 assists. Now, it's not all Harden's fault. Some of it, the Spurs played great defense. Some of it, his shooters missed shots. But the bottom line is he was able to score, but he wasn't able to elevate the game of his teammates. What we saw tonight, this is the James Harden we saw all season long, the guy who should be MVP of the league. And so the Rockets got back to basics on that. And so I think the team as a whole, they've ran with more commitment, more energy than they have the entire series. And this was a little different than Game 1. Game 1, you know, they were up by 30 at the half. It felt over after 15 minutes. This one, it wasn't. The Spurs clawed back within 4, so the Spurs actually made the Rockets sweat a little bit. And so to see the Rockets answer a punch from San Antonio, I think that's a really good sign. I think fans on both sides want to see what happens when it gets to be a close game down the stretch. But one thing you can say about the Rockets, they've taken a Spurs punch and responded. The other side of that, I don't know if the Spurs have taken a punch from the Rockets and responded. So that's the upside if you're a Rockets fan, is that when you hit that gear that they were tonight, and as Mike D'Antoni said after the game, they're fully capable of doing it in San Antonio. They did in Game 1. The Spurs have yet to prove that they can respond when the Rockets get to that level. And so, yeah, definitely James Harden, he made 4 threes, but more than that, he was aggressive. He hit 6 shots inside the arc, had 12 assists, just 4 turnovers. We saw a much, much more efficient James, actually 6 of 7 inside the arc. So this was the James Harden when he's at his best and everyone else kind of fell in line. Up and down the roster, Ryan Anderson, 3 of 7 threes. He got going after a slow start. Trevor Ariza, 7 of 9, 2 of 3 from three. By the way, Trevor played 46 minutes Friday. He played 35 minutes tonight. And the only reason why he didn't play more than that is because the Rockets got a big enough lead that he didn't have to play the last 8 minutes. Otherwise, he would have been over 40 minutes again. So to see someone like Trevor playing that many minutes while mostly guarding Kawhi Leonard on the other end, it's amazing what an Iron Man he is. I know it gets a little frustrating because sometimes the Spurs have been able to kind of funnel the ball to him, and he's not the best creator off the dribble, although he's pretty good at it a couple of times tonight. Took it to the rim hard. He doesn't start off to be a creator, just take it up hard in traffic and finish, and that's something he did. Actually, 5 of 6 inside the rim from Trevor, but more than that, his ability to eat up minutes for a rotation that's already kind of short, that's big. And as I said, going into this series, a big difference, Rockets playing San Antonio rather than Oklahoma City. When you play Oklahoma City, you can swarm Russell Westbrook with a lot of different looks because based on his size, there are different guys you can throw in there. At Kawhi's size, there's not really anyone other than Trevor that can guard him for long stretches. So Trevor's just got to be an Iron Man, and he's kind of the unsung hero because he's not the best three-point shooter. He's also obviously not the best creator off the dribble, and to a small extent, the Spurs have exploited him on that this series. But what he does do in terms of his defense, his effort, and his ability to log so many minutes, that's huge. And as this series gets down to 5, 6, 7 games, his ability to eat minutes is only going to become more important. Now, go up and down the roster, the rest of it. I haven't mentioned the name Pat Beverly yet, but I want to do that right now. Folks, y'all all know what happened with him before the game. He found out 90 minutes before, roughly, that his grandfather had passed away. And I want to tell you guys, as a media member, it was one of the more surreal scenes that I'd ever come across. Because when I went in the Rockets locker room, it was a state of shock. No one knew this. A lot of times, that'll be when the media finds out, but the team knew earlier in the day. No, even Rockets officials, team staff, his teammates, no one knew until right when folks got to the gym and right when the arena opened up. And so what happens between 90 and 45 minutes generally before a game, we as media are allowed in the locker room and we can conduct interviews. The players aren't required to talk to us, although a lot of them do, if they have, especially if they haven't talked at shoot around or practice. But basically, we're allowed to be in the locker room. That's what media can do up until 45 minutes before a game. And so Beverly came in, and of course I had seen a tweet from one of the national ESPN guys that he kind of broke down in the court and Rockets team staffers were consoling him, and he came in there and almost immediately started sobbing at his locker uncontrollably. Just intense sadness, and you know Pat Beverly's someone who wears his heart on his sleeve. Usually that's in a positive way in terms of his contributions on the floor. Sometimes you see it manifest itself in anger, such as the Oklahoma City series, the scrap he got in with the son of the Oklahoma City owner up there. But this was, well, the other side of that emotion. When something happens and you wear your heart on your sleeve the way he does, you could just see the pain. And you got to be honest, it was difficult to see at first if he was going to be ready to play tonight. But I thought the Rockets leadership, Ryan Anderson, James Harden, they went to another room, they talked with him, he came back in, he seemed to be a lot more composed after talking with James and Ryan, went out there on the floor, and then set a great tone by hitting the first three of the game, made two threes overall, 4 of 9 from the field, 10 points, 6 assists, 4 rebounds, played good defense, some of the best defense he's played the entire series, I would say, and well, the plus-minus, Pat Beverly playing just hours after the death of his grandfather, plus 27, second best in the entire Houston team. Only guy better was James Harden. So this was a mammoth performance was from Pat, and I was so impressed that he was able to channel his emotion in a positive way and show the commitment. Rockets, the people around the Rockets never doubted that he would play because they know the kind of warrior he is when it comes to this kind of setting. But this, even for Bev, is unique. This doesn't happen. By the way, another great touch. In the pregame introductions, Matt Thomas, the PA guy, rather than saying Pat Beverly, you know, 6'2 guard Pat Beverly from Arkansas, blah, 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 the way they normally do, because Arkansas is where he went to school, said Pat Beverly from Chicago. Obvious tribute to his family. We know he's going through a rough time. And boy, Pat, that was great to see. Thought he found his way. Both ends of the court tonight. And again, that plus 27 figure doesn't lie. Second only to James Harden. Now, the one bad element for the Rockets in this game, I haven't talked about yet, the injury to Nene. It happened early in the first quarter. I saw exactly when it happened. I hope it wasn't that severe. But Nene, to his credit, he was being aggressive, playing well out on the floor, actually jumped a pass at midcourt, went in for a dunk. But LaMarcus Aldridge, to his credit, he did not give up on the play. He hustled, and because of Aldridge's hustle, Nene had to extend himself in a rather awkward way to complete the dunk at a length that a 34-year-old typically does not have to extend himself. And unfortunately, you know what you're getting when you sign a player of that age, that kind of thing. He does have an injury history as well. So Nene, in his 2 minutes, he scored 4 points on 2 of 3 shooting, but the last one came at a price. The Rockets did not confirm after the game that he's done, but he was taken to the hospital immediately for an MRI, and well, even if he wasn't, groin injuries have a way of lingering. So I'm not really optimistic on him returning this series, and well, it may not even be in the playoffs, because groin injuries, even mild ones, that can take 2 or 3 weeks. So that is a loss for the Rockets. However, the Rockets bench was still very good tonight, and I want to hit on why. First things first, Eric Gordon, Lou Williams, both of them, this was like the Oklahoma City series. Eric Gordon, 8 of 13 overall, 6 of 9 from 3, 22 points. Lou Williams, 13 points, made 6 shots, made 1 3, also had 4 rebounds. They were both very energetic. So independent of Nene, those two guys played well. That always helps. However, beyond that, losing Nene, yes, it is a loss over the long haul. Maybe not this series, but especially if you go on to play the Warriors and anyone else, yeah, you're going to feel not having a guy who, well, was in the first round, was your second best player. However, let's not make him into something he's not. In this particular series, this was not the matchup for him that Oklahoma City was. His last two games in this series, minus 25 and minus 11. Nene was essential against Oklahoma City because Steven Adams was just far too much for Clint Capela to handle. Nene, it was a man's game, as D'Antoni said, and Capela's still a little green, basically just his second full season. Nene was essential down low against Steven Adams. The Spurs, Pau Gasol, LaMarcus Aldridge, David Lee, they do not have a big that is nearly as physical and bruising as Steven Adams. So that's a big difference. Nene in this series, not quite as essential. And I think what ends up happening, it's not all Nene's fault, but because he's a 34-year-old, I think that also kind of slows down the pace a little bit. And while Nene can still be a good half-court player, we certainly saw that in Game 4 against Oklahoma City, I think philosophically, this series has been defined by Games 1 and Game 4. The pace has been in the Rockets' favor. Game 2 and Game 3, the pace has been in San Antonio's favor. So when Nene was in the game, it's not his fault. It's just a natural byproduct of it. The pace slows down, and I think that kind of plays into the grinded-out style that Greg Popovich wants to install to not let the Rockets get out in transition and get the three-point looks that they got in Game 1 and now in Game 4. So it's not Nene's fault, but it wasn't the best matchup for him. And the way the Rockets kind of countered this tonight, initially they gave Sam Decker a few minutes at the 4 with Ryan Anderson at the 5. But what I thought was genius was in the second half, they actually started Eric Gordon, moved Ryan Anderson to the bench, and then brought in Anderson behind Capella as the backup 5. And at first, I thought the Rockets struggled with it in the second quarter. The thing is, with Ryan Anderson as your 5, I said this while it was happening, you've got to defend a little bit differently. You know at that point, yes, you're switching on everything, but you cannot bite on the pump fakes the way you do in a normal setting. Yeah, the Spurs have some shooters, but when you're playing that small, you've got to live with some shots. You've essentially just got to try and funnel it to some of their guys who aren't the best shooters and hope they miss some. And if someone like Jonathan Simmons gets hot, as he did tonight, and makes a few shots, you just got to shrug and say, well, that's a low percentage shot, and he made it. Because when you have Ryan Anderson in the game, no Cliff Capella, no true center, you're not going to be able to protect the rim, so you don't want to funnel people there. And I thought in the second quarter they struggled with that. You saw the Rockets closing out hard, and with Ryan in the middle, there's just no rebounding presence, and there's especially no shot-blocking presence. But I thought the Rockets adjusted well in the second half when Ryan came in off the bench. The other thing that happened when they did that, when they moved Eric Gordon, essentially went super small, Beverly, Gordon, Harden, Ariza around Capella, it essentially neutralized Pau Gasol. For Game 2 and Game 3, the Rockets been looking for ways to neutralize Pau. Well, folks, Pau just played 19 minutes tonight. This was not his game. 8.7 rebounds. He essentially got run out of the gym, and the Rockets were trying to figure out how to do that with their traditional starting five. Well, it might have been by accident, but the Rockets found a way tonight. Will it translate in San Antonio's? Some of it's going to depend on, well, do the Rockets make their shots? But at least for one night, I thought it worked because, e.g., that small ball lineup that got Pau Gasol away from the middle, it really got him off the floor, period, in the second half of this game. And then Ryan was effective coming in as the backup five, especially against David Lee, who's not really a true center anyway. You can tell that Pop is reluctant to play Dwayne Dedmon significant minutes in this series. So, boy, you don't want to say that Nene's injury was a good thing because you don't want to lose a player that's been that meaningful for a while. But in this particular matchup, I think the Rockets really unlocked something in the second half. Now, the real thing to watch, does this lead to a role for Decker? In the first half, it did. The second half, you could tell D'Antoni, sensing the magnitude of the game, probably did not want to experiment with that again. And so he actually slid Ryan to the four when Capella came back in, went a little more traditional for a few minutes in the fourth quarter. Would he keep doing that if that allowed the Spurs to get back into their traditional LaMarcus and Gasol sets? I don't know, but maybe it's a good thing that Decker did get 10 minutes, continuing to knock the rust off little by little. But the big storyline is that, well, that playing small, it worked. And whether it was by design or by accident, the Rockets found something, got a lot of continuity with Eric Gordon playing. And by the way, another shout-out to Eric, obviously, 6 of 9 from 3, just an incredible performance from him. But Eric's showing tonight, this was exactly what I was referring to on Saturday's post-game show after Game 3 in terms of the importance of a secondary playmaker. Not just a scorer, but a playmaker, a guy who can do some things off the dribble, not just a standstill shooter, but we saw him attack the rim a couple of times. We saw him elevate very high, move to the side. It wasn't just a matter of getting open threes. He had to work to get those shots. He was a legitimate playmaker. And when I think back to the Rockets, here's my take on them as a team. We have seen certain peaks in the last couple of months. Certainly the first round against Oklahoma City, especially defensively, was a tremendous showing. But to me, the best sustained period of basketball we have seen from the Houston Rockets all season long was from about the middle of November when Pat Beverly first returned until early January. They had the two 10 and 9 game winning streaks in there. Basically, after Beverly came back and that fortified the defense, they just took off. That was when they had the win over the Warriors in the middle of that. just went on a run, basically. It seemed like scoring 140 a night when they wanted to, posting 30, 40-point wins with regularity. And the consistent theme there, that was when Eric Gordon was at his best. That was when he was shooting over 35% from three, scoring 18 points a night, and was basically at a borderline all-star level through the start of 2017. Now, it feels like a long time ago because Eric's been kind of inconsistent with his shots since then. Maybe there's something to be said for his injury history, and maybe he wore down. We did see him have in February and January some issues with both his feet and his back. So who knows? But the point is, we have not seen that Eric Gordon since November and December, and I don't think it's a coincidence that that's when the Rockets were most sustainably at their best. Now, I want to say it's the best they've been all year. We have seen certain games, like the Cleveland game, like the Clipper game in March, like Game 1 against San Antonio and Oklahoma City, where the Rockets have been better for 48 minutes, or maybe for a week or two. But in terms of 4 to 6 weeks, a month or more of being consistently elite, when they were at their best was in that November, really through New Year's stretch, and that was when Eric Gordon was in that role as a secondary playmaker, an efficient, a lethal one, opposite James Harden, and this was the closest thing to that that I have seen since. Now, sure, it helps that he made his threes, but beyond that, I thought the pace they played with, I also thought that small ball lineup, that unlocked some opportunities for him with the efficiency of going against a defender that is not as quick, that had not been there for him for most of this series. And so is that going to transfer over to San Antonio? On paper, there's a good shot for it to do so. In reality, we've got to see it happen because there's been a lot of inconsistency from EG from game to game over the last few months. But as I said, if you're a Rockets fan, I think you can kind of hang your hat on the fact that the Rockets, after that NA injury, found some pretty positive things from a matchup standpoint. And I think that's going to give them a nice confidence boost going into San Antonio. I definitely don't think they're intimidated by San Antonio anymore. They won 1 by 27. Game 2 was right there for the taking, down 3 until the final seconds of the third quarter. So I think they're going to go in there believing they can take any game, be it Game 5 or Game 7. And while any of the X factors for them, Ryan Anderson got it going. He's been inconsistent this series. Both Eric Gordon and Lou Williams had their moments. Those are the guys that got it done for you in Oklahoma City when James Harden struggled a little bit. And to see them get going in a similar setting, not that James Harden struggled tonight, but of course in the Game 4, that was when they kind of put their foot on the gas in the Oklahoma City series, and hopefully we're starting to see the same thing happen in this series. Because, yeah, maybe James isn't going to be 28 points, 10 of 18, 12 assists. It's his first 2010 game in a while. He did have 20 and 14 in Game 1, so don't want to overlook that. But generally, the Spurs have done a pretty good job of limiting his efficiency. Now, he still shot well from the field, but he hasn't been able to be that marquee distributor, so if it gets sticky again, it's going to be a little easier for the Spurs to dictate pace in San Antonio than Houston. Let's just be real. That's how it works. Then the easiest way to counter that is to get those guys like Eric Gordon, like Lou Williams, out of just shooting mode and into playmaking. And tonight, they had a combined 35 points on 14 of 28 shooting off the bench. And so I thought that was a big step in the right direction for them individually and, of course, for the Rockets as a team because, well, they got the 125-104 win. Also, two final shout-outs. Clint Capella, barely mentioned his name because all the excitement at the center position has been around Ryan Anderson now that Nene presumably out for the series. Capella becomes all the more important. Had 8 points, 9 rebounds tonight, 2 blocks. Nothing to write home about. Did get a little bit of foul trouble, 5 fouls in his 25 minutes, but he was steady. And the thing for Capella with Nene out, he cannot have lapses like he did against Oklahoma City. Nene gives you certain insurance in case Capella goes MIA, as young players tend to do from time to time. Oklahoma City, you could afford it because Nene was there. Now he's not. The good news is that it's not like Clint stopped trying. It's because Oklahoma City had such a damn good matchup for him in Steven Adams. The Spurs don't have a big that seems to give him that many problems. Clint has been very consistent in this series with the possible exception of Game 2 when he had 3 rebounds, I think, in his 25 or so minutes. But other than that, and even then, he was still a quality contributor offensively. He's been a quality contributor offensively in all 4 games, defensively, and on the glass in 3 of the 4. So again, that's why long-term, do you want to lose Nene? Absolutely not. But this series, if Clint needs to step it up a few more minutes, he looks like he's fully capable of taking on a 30 minutes per game role instead of 25. Didn't need to do it tonight, and he was in a little bit of foul trouble, but if he needs to step up his minutes in games 5, 6, and 7, I see a possibility for him to do so. Final shot of the night, Bobby Brown, my man, 11 points, 5 of 7 shooting, 1 of 2 from 3, 11 points in 6 minutes. It's a shame Bobby didn't get a regular role because obviously the Rockets have a ton of guards, especially playmaking, scoring guards, but this guy is a professional scorer. He's loved in that locker room. At his age, it's tough to see him ever kind of finding his way into a true rotation role with the Rockets, but they love his presence on the end of that bench, and so when he gets in and plays well, I cannot be happier for him. Great teammate. Great guy. He's basically Mike D'Antoni's human victory cigar, and well, Mike gets to light it for 6 whole minutes tonight, so it's only appropriate because certainly Mike made some great adjustments playing with pace. That's as much to do with Mike D'Antoni as it is James Harden, so give credit to Mike, give credit to James, and well, they both got to light their victory cigar because Bobby, well, yeah, he's D'Antoni's literally because he can put him in when the game is over, and well, he's James's victory cigar because, of course, everyone knows how close of friends that James Harden and Bobby Brown are. So anyway, with that said, I'll wrap up the podcast there. Again, happy final from Toyota Center. Rockets 125, Spurs 104. Game 5 will be Tuesday night in San Antonio. Much friendlier start time of 7 p.m. at least. Now the Cavs-Raptors series is over. We're done with 8 p.m. start time, so everything is going to be 7 p.m. from here on out. So it'll be a lot easier for our post-game episodes. I'm thankful of that. Hashtag team sleep. But regardless of how little sleep I have to get, I'll always be here doing post-game episodes with you guys, the diehard Rockets fans that make this show possible. So again, if you're not following me on Twitter already, you can do so at Ben Dubose. Follow the show on Twitter at LockedOnRockets. And also email us, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the Rockets fan. So with that said, go out and enjoy your Monday. Get some rest. Monday's an off day for the Rockets, an off day for the Astros too. And then, well, Tuesday, it's the most meaningful playoff game the Rockets have had in a long while. Game 5 very well could tip the balance in this best of 7 series. 7 p.m. tip at AT&T Center on Tuesday night. And I look forward to talking with you guys then right here on Locked On Rockets.
With the holidays around the corner, now's your chance to save time and money at Safeway's Stock Up Sale. Plus, earn 4 times gas reward points on participating items. Look for tags on items like Honey Nut Cheerios. Select varieties are 4 for $8 with your club card. And select varieties of Betty Crocker Cake Mix, Brownie Mix, or Frosting are 10 for $10 with your club card. Maximum gas reward at participating Sunoco stations is 20 cents per gallon and $1 per gallon at Safeway stations in a single fill-up up to 25 gallons. Other restrictions, limitations, and exclusions apply. For complete details, go to Safeway.com.